Welcome back to the official Atari Games podcast. This is Jason here, joined by two members of Bewilder, and that would be the very talented company that produced the videos for Lunar Lander Beyond. So joining me is Peter Jordan, the lead compositor. How you doing, Peter?
I'm doing good. I'm feeling that falafel that Nick and I had after lunch today, but other than that, I'm on the money.
What kind of falafel are we talking? Spicy, standard, straightforward?
It was a chicken. It was pretty straightforward. There was a bunch of salad and stuff. I just think it was way bigger than I anticipated. So,
all right, we'll strap in. I'm not going to ask you.
But I'm ready to rip.
Great. I'm not going to ask you to run any laps during this podcast in particular. Cool. So you'll be in good shape. Thanks for joining. Also joining me is Nicholas Ricks, animation director on the project. Hi, Nicholas. Welcome. And thanks for joining.
How you doing? Yeah, thanks for having me. Awesome.
Yeah. Cool. Well, are you also weighed down by the falafel?
I'm not. I'm good, actually. My energy slump is usually around this time of the day. So we'll see how I go. It's usually time for me to get another snack in. But I'm sure I'll be okay.
Got it. Well, thank you for joining. And look, the Atari news this week is, look, there's other news out there. But for our purposes, let's just talk about the big news. Lunar Lander Beyond, it's out. It came out Tuesday. And as the time this drops, the physical versions for PS5 and Switch, as well as that collector's edition for Switch, are also available. Fun fact about the Switch version, that collector's edition comes with the art book, which includes both art from Dreams Incorporated that they did on the game, in addition to art from Bewilder, who worked on the cutscenes inside the game itself. So that is a pretty cool function feature there. Check that out if you're so inclined to. And if you're not, and you're like, man, I don't know about this, wish lists, always appreciated before and after release. Speaking of which, you can still wish list Neosprint, which will be coming out at some point to be determined. Oh, also, we announced Yara's Rising, so go check out that that trailer, because that's going to be a pretty cool game from our friends at WayForward. All right, enough of that. Covered a bunch of stuff there. Obviously, subscribe and review us. Join the Discord, all that stuff. All those details are going to be down in the links below in the description. Now, gentlemen, let's jump into this. First, before we start talking about Bewilder, what you guys are all about, the work you did on Lunar Lander, let's start with the warm-up question, shall we? We're talking about cutscenes in games, right? You guys worked on the animations within the game, the interstitials, a key feature of many video games. What I want to know from each of you, and I'll go as well, what is your first memorable video game cutscene?
Whoa. I'll let Peter go first.
I think for me, I mean, the first one that comes up is definitely probably one of the stuff at the end of Contra for some reason. Contra 2, the old school. Yeah, that's popping up big time. I think that as a kid, that's...
Explain it a little bit for the people who don't know.
Man, it's essentially a side-scrolling super early... I think it was Nintendo that came out with it. I can't really remember, but it was...
Yeah, it was side-scrolling. Yeah.
It was, side-scroller, 8-bit style, but really, really well-done art and like jungle-themed Rambo characters kind of shooting random aliens and robots and stuff.
I meant more about like what was the cutscene? Like what happens in it? Like what?
I mean, this is how old I am, is that it was so long ago.
Fair enough. Okay, cool.
But I remember that being, I think there's like this really big robot fight at the end and there's just a ton of explosions. And I think the camera kind of moves like further and further away from the location in these like little bits of 8-bit style art that I remember. That's what I remember being the first one. But I think if we're talking favorites, it's definitely for me the... there's a scene in Dark Souls 3 where you walk into a room and you find the Abyss Watchers for the first time. And there's that two of the Abyss Watchers are kind of killing each other before they end up killing you. And that to me is like the most badass thing ever. It's so
awesome.
Cool.
Love it. Nicholas, what about you?
I guess the most memorable one for me would probably still be Final Fantasy VII. PlayStation 1, when that came out, still, yeah. I mean, everything about that game, I feel, was one of the most perfect games I ever played in my life. But yeah, still in my head, it looks really cool. I haven't seen it in a long time, but talking nostalgic stuff, yeah, that was good.
Was it any particular moment in that, or it's more of like the combination of everything as a whole?
I think after you do the sort of the intro sort of playthrough and you're getting to know the characters, and then you get the pull up of the train that comes through, and you sort of getting this overall look of, I think it was called Midgard. Yeah, Midgard. Yep.
Yeah.
And you're getting this beautiful view of the city, and like you're going to go and see the rest of it now. And I think that's what I loved about that game, was the stuff that you're going to discover. But yeah, that was epic for me.
Yeah, and that was the first one. Like, that was the first game. That was the first Final Fantasy game that went full 3D and had those kind of cutscenes in it and did that tone setting. I guess for me, it's got to be Metal Gear Solid 2. That opening sequence where he's just walking on, when he's walking on the bridge. It's just like, you tell me another game. I mean, the first game sets up the tone pretty well, but you know, you don't have the established characters, so you're just kind of hearing this codex scene and swimming underwater. But in this one, he's just walking along a bridge that I know. He's on the GW bridge, and he's just like so cool, walking in his poncho, smoking, and then jumps off the bridge onto this tanker, and then that kicks off the game. Like, there's not much of a cooler way to start a game than that.
Yeah,
that's sick. That's super impactful. I mean, you could pick literally any cutscene from that game. It just gets completely crazy. But that's the one that stands out. But cool. Thanks for entertaining that little that little exercise there. And now let's talk about the cutscenes for Lunar Lander Beyond. That's what we're here to talk about. You guys have done the work on that. And I want to get into it. I want to know kind of a lot about it, but let's start pretty quickly here. Who wants to give me a quick overview on Bewilder? Where are you guys? What have you done? And what are you doing?
I guess I'm the one that's been around the longest, maybe in this whole thing. Gosh, how long have you been around for? It's like year 8 or year 9 now, I think.
We're close to 10 now.
Yeah, something like that. I've kind of lost count. Almost 9 years doing the whole animation stuff. I mean, it's mostly animation, bit of illustration. I mean, we still do that as well. We started out as, I want to say there was maybe 6 of us.
Yeah.
And it's like gradually over the years gotten bigger and bigger, and to a point that now we've moved into these bigger offices, this big office space now. I don't know how many we are now, because we have some remote people, some people in the office. I want to say we're like around 25-ish, I think. Hey, Peter, wouldn't you say?
Yep.
And I guess in terms of the type of work that we do, it's been a myriad of things, like really cool, like car brands, shoe brands. Help me out here, Peter.
We've done a lot of campaigns, both for social media and TV, and kind of what do you call it? I always forget whether it's above the line or below the line, but it's like lots of in-person kind of advertising with billboards.
Yeah,
we usually deal with a lot of branding and advertising campaigns. That's why the Lunar Lander stuff was such a big deal to us, because Nick and I personally love games, and obviously games are cool, and it was a lot of fun. Yeah. So, we've also done a bunch of stuff for, like lyric videos and some music artists, like recording artists, and both locally and internationally. And we're a bit all over the place, in terms of like our main source of work, I guess, but it's also nice because it keeps it interesting.
Yeah, I guess if anything needs visuals, it's not always the case. I mean, we always enjoy the storytelling aspect of animation, but sometimes we end up doing stuff that has no story at all. It's just about doing doing some cool visuals. So yeah, we do that as well.
Awesome. Thanks for that. And you guys are located in, I was hoping you'd say where you're located. You're down in, you're in South Africa.
Yeah, we're in right. Cape Town. Yeah.
Cape Town. Yeah.
It's very cool. Is there like a bunch of like kind of services like you guys down operating down in South Africa? Or are you kind of a unique example of that?
There's a good, like it's interesting because a lot of South Africa's TV networks operate in Johannesburg. So a lot of the more kind of TV-based animation studios will be posted out there. But Cape Town's a bit more, we're a bit more film-orientated, actually. The film industry is pretty big down here, so there's lots of shoots that always happen here. And then a much smaller portion of that is your traditional animation stuff, which I guess we fall into. There's probably, I'd say, like 5-6 other studios in the city that are kind of in our realm. But just outside of that, there are also bigger 3D studios and that kind of thing. So yeah, there's Cape Town has got a bit of a animation community going, and there's all sorts of meetups and cool stuff happening
a lot. All right.
Yeah. Lots of freelancers and lots of talented people here. Yeah.
Cool. Good stuff. So when working on Lunar Lander Beyond, like when working on those actual cutscenes themselves and working on the animation, what was the early processes like? Like what was the, how did you define the approach, and how was the collaboration working with Dreams Incorporated?
Well, I guess we got the brief, and we got the sort of general idea of how much stuff we need to create. Before we jumped into the storyboarding process or animatics, we just got excited and just had a look at a bunch of inspiration out there. Not just obviously the artwork that you guys sent us, that Dreams Incorporated sent us, but we just looked at some of like our favorite stuff from old 80s, 90s, 2000s, like animation that sort of felt like the game. That's kind of where we started with the process. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I think, it's worth giving a little context here, right? So basically I think it was around, it was some point in the summer of last year that we started talking. Right. And basically we had Lunar Lander Beyond. It was coming along nicely. We had this deeper story to the game, and the art was coming along nicely. And the game was almost done. Effectively, like all the levels were basically done. The team was putting on final polish leading up to beta, and there was an internal idea to, hey, let's bolster some of these production values. So the idea was, hey, let's add some animated cutscenes. And we reached out to a few teams and eventually ended up landing on Bewilder. Gave us a really really solid pitch and liked their work and had confidence that they could deliver a good job. And fortunately they did. And what you see is the result. But you guys started with that first intro cinematic, right? Like that first one is so necessary. You know, I talk about how Metal Gear Solid 2 is so important in setting up the tone of that game. And your work is actually the first art that people see when they boot up the game. It's because when you start the game, the first thing that plays is that kind of what I like to call the anime intro, right? Is that these are all the characters. This is kind of what they're doing now before you meet them. And then you get like a little bit of other things like sprinkled here and there without getting overly, without having too much exposition. Can you talk about the approach in like, how is something like that created? Walk me through the steps. And more so walk our audience to the steps, because I was there, of how you go about creating something like that. Like where does it start? How does it end, etc.?
I guess with the intro, I mean, we specifically just the intro. Let's just can unpack that one, I guess.
Let's focus on one piece at a time. And that was the first one that was actually done, because more so than setting the tone for the, and maybe I'm getting ahead, I'm burying the lead here, but more so than setting the tone for the game, it was also setting the tone for the rest of the animations.
Yeah, that's the time that we're trying to figure out how it's going to look and feel. We're trying to do a couple of style frames to sort of get a gist of what we were aiming for. You know, when we started showing you guys some of the early artwork, that's before we even animate anything, is to sort of get a feel of how it could look, some of the backgrounds. It's too long ago to actually recall every aspect of how we approach it.
Because you don't have to go too far in the details, and you could honestly pull from other projects as well if it means coloring the certain process.
I think
what's interesting about these conversations is kind of behind the scenes look into how things get made, right? Because most people don't know. They just see the pretty pictures and the things moving around, and they say, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. Great. And they move on and they forget about it. But the actual work and details behind it are things that are worth surfacing in these kind of conversations.
So, I mean, there's general steps that we take with every single project, but yeah, I can honestly say that we almost reinvent it every time.
Oh, really? So, okay.
Yeah, it's never a straight line with anything. You know, you kind of got that graph of, you know, it's doing this and it's doing that and get to the end. It's never a straight line. I think getting into doing this specifically, because we hadn't worked on anything like this before in terms of just like the video game realm. This was like a new thing for us.
I remember that in the beginning, there were a lot of, we were sending a bunch of stuff to make sure that we had the characters in the ballpark before we really went on making all the worlds. But at the same time, we were starting on matte paintings and color schemes for actually building a world that we could operate in while thinking of all the camera angles and the specific shots related to the intro at the same time.
Yeah, and always trying to make sure that there's a mix of different types of shots, mediums and wides, and you know, trying to come up with that flow and the edits. It gets more interesting as soon as we start getting into the animatic phase.
Yeah.
So, because the boards can only do so much, and then once we get the edit in, then we can kind of get a feeling of how the flow, and if we've got a good balance of different types of shots in there. Because obviously there's no voices, there's no character interactions, anything like that. It's just about how can you pull someone in, from the get-go. And I remember as soon as we started adding music to the whole thing, that, I mean, I might be jumping ahead here.
No, but it's fine. Go for it.
As soon as we got that music in, it changed the whole thing. Very often we'll be animating or creating stuff without any audio yet or any music. And we always say this, it'd be great to have that stuff up front. We seldom do here, Peter.
It makes a big difference, but
it does. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I think most people think about sound as a thing that comes later, but I guess in your sense, you're saying that music, it almost like defines the flow and the pacing.
100%.
Yeah.
It's kind Absolutely. Of like the way that I often like to look at editing is almost like, you know, it's almost like doing a VJ set or editing a music video it's like playing. There's something that happens with rhythm and tempo and picture that if you have the one, like if you have them together, then there's a lot more impact there. But, obviously with a job that has this kind of scope, I mean, we were working on the animatic alone for a couple months, so it's not always necessarily feasible to kind of do things that way around, but it does make quite a difference. But I think in the same breath you could also say that it's probably way more helpful for somebody that's composing music to actually have the full picture as well, because they'll definitely have a feeling for the tone that the music needs to fit instead of trying to guess the tone of the sequence that you're kind of actually trying to go for. So there was, as far as I remember, there wasn't, I don't think there was a lot of back and forth in the music. I think that was pretty seamless stuff. Once we got it in there, things were looking good.
Yeah, there was, I remember when we started doing the music, there was a, you guys sent like a few different versions, like tonally what you were going for, and then that kind of drilled down. But you already, you also had the soundtrack for the game, and they have like 30 songs in the game, one for every level, which is wild. So then to create, and then you guys created the original songs for these, cutscenes as well. So there's actually a lot of original music in this game, but it makes perfect sense because you see a lot of these trailers. Like I often wonder that when I see a movie trailer or a game trailer, I say, what came first? The song or the, like, did they say, hey, I love this song, let's put this in the trailer. Like one of my favorite trailers of all time is the Battlefield 1 trailer. It's a Battlefield 1 cinematic trailer. It's just talking about, which is funny because Battlefield's notoriously a multiplayer game, but the way the music syncs up and the way they cue it with the actual video itself is so flawless and build up a hype and emotion that you never thought you could feel for a game that is all about multiplayer. And then they do this for these random, random dudes that you might be, that you'd never even heard of before in a World War I campaign, but it's awesome. So I highly recommend checking that out. Yeah. But it makes perfect sense. I also know that like you're working on something else. Like, and can you speak a little bit to like the whole game is done in 2D, right? So the character thing is interesting because animating characters that already exist but don't have motion because they're all still images. And then also kind of you basically added a third dimension to a world that was built in 2D. I know we might be kind of hitting on a theme where it's like, I can't really remember, but can you think of any challenges? Like was that an interesting challenge to you? Or was there anything that came up along the way? Like, you know, is there anything that you've done like this that was similar before where you had these existing assets, then you had to kind of create the depth to something that kind of already exists, but not really?
I think the characters weren't like necessarily a new thing because we were always used to just most of the stuff that we do is character orientated. It was nice to have existing characters in a way because quite often we would have to create characters from scratch for a project. This time there was a myriad of characters that we had to pull from and just figure out how to bring to life. I can't say that was the most challenging part. I would definitely say that the ships were the challenging part because we, and it was challenging for me particularly because I didn't really work with the 3D team so much, but they helped out so much in bringing those ships into a 2D sort of animation. And I was quite hell-bent on trying to make sure that they felt like they belonged in that 2D environment because 3D in 2D can look a little bit jarring sometimes. It might not like sync up or look very good. But we spent a large amount of time trying to get those ships to look right. And based on the artwork from the game, and interpreting that, so that was very, very challenging.
Peter, anything to add on that? I don't know if you were
not really. I mean, Nick had a lot more to do with the earlier phase of the project. Funnily enough, I think I was actually on the very first call that we had together, Jason.
Okay,
but
so long ago,
and I mean, my role as a compositor, kind of was more involved with by the time that we had figured out what the characters looked like, what our lead narrative was going to be for the intro of the game, and then helping out with the tempo of that edit, getting a flow for the whole thing. And by the time that we started getting in matte paintings and sketch frames for our animatic, that's when I basically come in and start timing out all the animation for the whole thing. Using that obviously as a guide to show the cell animators that this is the tempo and this is the frame count that we're operating within for these certain shots, or these couple are going to be stills, these are all going to be after effects. I don't know if these are terms that really anybody else
no,
knows.
It's cool.
I'm sure they do, maybe.
This is good.
Yeah, that was more my role. I think Nick had a lot to do with the earlier stuff, I think.
Okay, understood. Got it. I'm going to come back to that in a second. But first, Nick mentioned something interesting that I was going to bring up as well, which is, what you see presented largely appears 2D. Like it largely looks like 2D, almost 90s era animation style, right? Like Saturday morning cartoons. But a lot of these elements are actually 3D. So, when I said creating depth, I have behind me, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see like this is a static image from the game, but they had to create 3D assets for things that were only in 2D. So like all of the ships that were in the game, there are 3D models of those ships that were used for the animations so that you could actually see the beetle like flying through and clipping asteroids or meteors, whatever those would be at that point. And then you also have, I remember one challenge was the spider. Because the spider is an interesting one, because in the game, like it looks fine because you're just working with two dimensions. But there was a lot of times where when we had that, any other perspective of that ship made it look a little weird a lot of times, depending on the position. Like I think there was an issue with the front of it was too big.
Yeah.
Or it almost looked more like a Y-wing at times. Like it was really bizarre, because you don't think about when you're looking at like it from the front perspective, like how deep does that go? What's behind it? Where do those legs actually fit? What's going on there? Oh, you sounds like you got something to elaborate on there. Go for it.
Because I guess they have the landing position and then their flying position and sort of just figuring out how, thick they would be and, how they might look flying straight towards us or away from us. There was a lot of, what we would do in the process, we'll create something called an orthographic, which is just a sketch, like a turnaround basically. For 2D people, it's a turnaround. For 3D, it's an orthographic, so that the 3D team can take that and basically flesh out like a little sculpture for us. And there was a lot of back and forth, that maybe you guys didn't actually even see, but there was a lot of back and forth between 3D artists and myself to try and get them to look as believable as possible as a 3D lander. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I think they did a good job. And on that point, I think, Peter, we kind of get into some more of your work specifically. On those landers as well, like we kind of gave you a list of all the videos and animations that we wanted in the game. And I think some of the most impressive stuff is also the briefest stuff in which is the intros, the lander intros. And it does such a great job of kind of capturing what those landers do in like 5 to 10 seconds. It's like blink and it's gone, but you get exactly, this is the heavy tank like lander. Yeah. This is the nimble lander. Like the dragonfly intro is so cool.
Yeah.
Like I absolutely, what was it like working on one of those sequences? Can you
I think you yeah, I think those were probably my favorite to animate. I think and likewise the planet intros as well. I really enjoyed the planet intros.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. Those are great. They're all great, let's be real.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something cool about the lander intros where it's like, obviously with the chief intro and outro for the game, there is some flying going on, but with specifically the lander intros, like we could build the shots around just something cool, which is a lander flying. So you can do things that are a little bit more, less narrative based, but just look super cool. So there's some weirder angles that are going on there, like specifically that there's also a bit where the spider is, I forget the planet it was on, but it's kind of that front-on shot that swivels around as it's kind of like closer to this dusty planet. Like those shots are some of my favorites that we ended up getting to, just because it's not like we had to kind of pause to do something super narrative based. It was just like, okay, the lander has to fly. How cool can we make it look? and timing out that kind of stuff is super fun. And Yeah, like I said, the planet intros were super fun as well.
The planets were some of my favorites. Also, I guess, you know, the matte paintings on those look beautiful, and then sort of bringing them to life in a very subtle way, and with these just minimal, like, no, it reminds me of, so I'm a huge fan of Samurai Jack, and just the stillness of some of the shots that happen in Samurai Jack. There's no narration, there's just a feel, and there's a pacing that happens, and you just know when to cut. Or Gendy knew when to cut. And that's what I love about those sort of the planet intros specifically. And I think with like the landers, the spider one was challenging in a fun way because of those cuts and those camera moves that we had in there. It's definitely some of the stuff that I've never done before. It was really fun. You're talking about the dragonfly. Actually, when we did the animatic for that, I thought it looked amazing. It was really cool what our storyboard artist came up with. But I was very worried about how we were going to actually do it. We aimed high.
A lot of movement. Yeah.
And quite often we'll come up with these things, and it's just we're excited about it. We might not know how we're going to actually do that in the end, but I think it's really important to like create, even at that stage, figure out how we can make it fun and enjoyable, engaging at the same time.
Even things that you kind of like hold to your chest and be like, look, we think this is cool. Maybe we don't tell Dreams or Atari about this. So then if we can do it, we do it. And if we don't, then no one's the wiser, right? We're going to do something cool. As long as they're not aware of that opportunity cost, then we're good.
Right? Usually ends up happening is we want to do the cool thing anyway. And then we bite ourselves in the ass like 3 months down the line. And then it's like, okay,
because somebody knows.
We got to do it now.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see you right up front just whether the idea is going to be difficult or not. But I'm also probably not going to say no. It's a bit of a challenge, but it feels right. I think that's the
totally. I want to, so one of the fun things about doing these podcasts with teams that I've deeply worked with, is that I could always call out kind of interesting, funny anecdotes that would otherwise not be known. And in this case, I have to bring up the pile of cocaine. Now, are you guys, do you know what I'm talking about?
I have no idea, but I'm dying.
No, I don't think Peter knows about this.
Oh, okay, cool. So in the, one of the longest sequences of the intro cinematic is the Sicana scene where he is like, it looks like where a patient comes in, it looks like he's about to do something unwieldy to him, and then he shoots him with a water gun. And this was purely out of Alvaro's idea, where he's like, because it was originally something else. And Alvaro had this idea, Alvaro, the director on the game and game designer on the game, he was like, oh yeah, he's like, I kind of had this weird idea where he like does, and he basically described exactly what happens in the cutscene, and you guys did it. But when you first see Sakana sitting in the chair, originally, now the character Sakana, and it's funny reading the reviews because they all pick up on it. They're like, yeah, you got this kind of, because it's not like it's not that subtle, but he's clearly like a bit of a drug addict, this guy, and he's a sketchy character. But like in the first pass on this sequence, it was so literal. There was literally pile of cocaine. Sorry, it wasn't literally cocaine, but there was a pile of white substance, of white powder on the desk. And that was probably one of the moments where I think a lot of times people look at game development and they're like, where does, anything bad is always the publisher's fault, right? Well, if that was going to be a huge, that is the publisher's fault, that we were like, yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. We don't want an M rating on this game for drugs.
Yeah, for like 7 seconds.
We already have a mechanic where you're picking up pills, and I was worried that was going to get us to T or M, but fortunately we got the E10. But yeah, yeah. Anything you want to talk about with the cocaine pile?
You know, I had totally forgotten about that until you brought it up. But yeah, I remember. Yeah, I do remember there was a version of the intro where Stakhanis we were trying to be a bit more literal with like his shadiness. And our board artist came up with something, and we were like, this is cool, I guess, you know, maybe this is what needs to be shown. But then I can't remember exactly, but you guys came back to us with like, we can't do this because we'll get a special rating on the game.
Yeah.
So yeah, I actually need to go back and have a look at that again.
We still have it. I love it. Yeah. You know, I want to end on this, at least for this part of the discussion. What's your, you know, someone asked me before, cause I was relaying my experience with showing the game off at PAX and how it's like such a cool, rewarding experience when people get to play the game and you get to see firsthand them enjoying it. And that's a really rewarding experience. And he asked me, what's my favorite part of, the game process. And I said, actually, it's not that, it's like the development of it. So I want to, that's kind of inspired me. I think I'm going to start asking this more often. What is your favorite part of the animation process? Not just for this, but in general, like what do you get most excited about when you're building out these animations or with your job itself? So either one of you could take it first.
Wow. I think I have like this weird, like love-hate relationship with the entire process. Like there are some instances where even if you're doing something that's super cool, it can be really taxing and challenging in terms of like the deadline aspect or like a,
sure,
like a difficult client or whatever.
So sorry.
I actually, no. That's not what I was going with. But but yeah, there is sometimes, I think maybe it's just more a perspective thing where it's like, if you're just so busy focused on making something and making it cool and getting it done in time, that you almost don't have the perspective to enjoy the whole process while you're actively involved with it. Like, I think maybe Nick can agree with this. Like, we've spoken about this a couple of times where it's like, we actually look back on projects and we go, oh, wow, that was actually kind of cool. so maybe I'm a bit in that camp, but in terms of like technically enjoying some part of the more technical side of things, I think because I am a compositor and I just like making things look super cool, whenever we get to like the final grading side of things, like the actual polish, the atmospherics, the little embers on the end of like a planet exploding or that kind of thing, that to me is like there's little bits of like polish that happened there that I enjoy doing personally, that I think make it feel more believable and finished in a sense. Yeah, maybe that.
Cool. Yeah, and I can say that it's never anything that we ever have to ask Peter to do. He just does it. And we'll get a render from him, and we're like, that is amazing. We have full faith in this gentleman, by the way. He knows exactly what he's doing all the time, even though he probably doesn't agree with me. But it's always nice to get something back. And I remember there's this one part where there's a.
Can you send me a clip of this, Jason? Just send me a clip.
You have the whole thing. These don't get edited unless there's profanity.
It's gonna be my new ringtone.
Okay.
love it.
But yeah, I remember specifically there's this one. I mean, all the stuff that Peter's done on it is amazing. But there's this one part where I had an idea for the warp. I can't remember if it was the Beckett or which one of the ships, but.
It was Beckett.
Yeah, it was the Beckett. And I had an idea in my head of how I thought it could look. And then Peter was like, let me just try something. And then he came back to me with this effect. And I was like, that's probably the coolest thing I've seen in this whole project so far. I mean, there's a lot of cool things, but that was, for me, it was something that stood out. I was like, this is perfect.
Yeah, I think there was something you were thinking of drawing or having done in 3D. On the actual warp sequence.
I was going to complicate it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was going to complicate it a lot. And then, yeah, he came through with something that I thought was just perfect. That couldn't be redone in Sal or hand animation and stuff like that. And that was great. But I think for me, in terms of what I love in the process, is when I get to assign myself some animation work. So I think on this project, I didn't get to do a whole lot of that, but there are some shots in the intros and outros and cutscenes that I did specifically choose that I wanted to work on. While I did a lot of the animation direction on it, I also am very much in love with cell animation. It's something that I don't always get to do much, but if I do, I get stuck in, and I love doing that. So I just get to sit down and work on the in-betweens and the pacing and stuff like that. And I just love seeing that the hand-drawn process and the hand-drawn animation coming to life. It's something that's still, it never wears off on me. I really do still enjoy it.
That's awesome. You're still a grassroots guy at heart.
Yeah.
You're a director in name only, but you really just want to be down there in the weeds.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Cool, guys. Well, thanks for that. I appreciate it. Yeah. And excellent work. I mean, it really shows, I mean, the love behind it and the dedication, the passion, like it's really, really cool. And there are some really impressive shots. That shot from the Beckett zooming out to then have seen like all the characters, that was like such a cool frame that I'm like, this seemed really complicated.
I was really worried about that shot. Yeah,
it's awesome. It's really cool. And if you're wondering what that was, it's basically the last animation sequence from the intro before you get to the title, where you basically you see all the characters and it like zooms out showing all the characters and then out to see the Beckett and then the Lunar Lander animation of the logo, which is also awesome too. I mean, you guys killed it. I could just gloat about this. I could have gloated about this myself for 42 minutes, but I appreciate
so
you guys
that
being
shot
there.
Specifically, it was interesting because it was in the animatic and I was like, we have to 100% do this because it's probably going to be the coolest shot of the whole thing. But also, again, from a technical side, I was like, I really don't know how the hell we're going to do this. Because what happens is that from the inside of the lander, we kind of pull through the hologram bit, and then we show the rest of the room, and then the outside into that super wide. And with all of those, they were basically over 4K, I think some of them were closer to 6K, 8K frames that were designed to fit in 3D throughout that whole thing. So essentially I would take each layer and build like these boxes of rooms and lay out all the 2D elements in space and then move the camera through and cheat cut like through the hologram, through the window. So it was like patching together almost 20,000 pixels of information in one camera move, which kind of killed my machine, but I think it was worth it at the end.
So much. It was so cool.
Yeah, that was a really complicated thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks complicated, but I you guys nailed it. Really cool stuff. So real quick here, when we wrap up, didn't get to do it last week because we didn't have time. Or I should say last episode, which was 2 weeks ago. So let's do a quick lightning round here. Each go around the horn here and see what we're each playing now. What kind of games you guys are playing? So just pick one, move on to the next one. So which one of you wants to go first?
I'll start because I don't think Nicholas is playing as much as I am right now.
Here we go.
But I just got I'm typically a PC guy, and I guess maybe I'm probably about 10 years too late for this, but I just got the Uncharted pack.
Nice.
The last two, I think it's a Thieves End Thieves End and Legacy or The Lost Legacy. That's it. Yeah.
Lost Legacy. Yeah.
And I just started the second one. And yeah, it's weird because I think I missed that gap in that era of PlayStation games. You know, I missed out on, I kind of moved over to PC the older I got. And I think something about like Mad Dog's ability to swap between cinematics and actual gameplay that's so like seamless was like really, really crazy to me. Like, even, I mean, I know that game's probably like almost 10 years old now, but it's like, it's just something you don't often see in other games, the way that they really think about it in terms of cinematics and making you feel like you're climbing up a stupid tower for some reason, you know. It's like, I've really enjoyed it. I'm typically someone who kind of tries to get a lot of indie games, a lot of like smaller companies, just because I think it's quite honestly worth the money. And there's a lot of like interesting experiences that happen there, but playing something that's that triple A is kind of, it's been enjoyable actually.
Totally. I just want to, before anybody else jumps out and freaks out, you are referring to Naughty Dog.
Oh, sorry.
It's all good. Yeah, no, it's all good. I just want to make sure. If anybody's just like, hey, wait a minute. No, we got it. We'll correct the record. It's all good. Delete that comment. Delete the comment. Take it
like
back.
Like I said, I missed out on that era. Yeah, yeah. So.
Well, look, I'm excited for you because you get to play Ghost of Tsushima soon on PC. And that's probably my favorite PlayStation game that's come out in the last like 10 years. It's crazy. It's so good. All right, Nicholas, what about you?
Yeah, because I'm a very busy guy. I do not get to play as many games as Peter does.
I'm not going to check your blog and see when you last played it, so it could be anything.
But the last thing that I was playing, that I just started playing, was Red Dead Redemption 2.
Okay, cool.
That's also quite an old game. Even PC port is quite old, but it still runs amazingly.
It's still great.
And the storytelling in it so far that I'm getting from it, and anything that I've seen about it, just blows my mind. Compared to there's lots of things that I can probably compare it to, but I've really just started playing that. That's me. Yeah.
Nice. I like how for as a busy guy, you picked a small, tight experience that you can easily tackle within your busy schedule. So that's a good move. As for myself, speaking of small little games, or seemingly small, I just started over the weekend. I started playing a game called Sprawl. Sprawl is also a PC game. It is a first-person shooter. It's an indie game that is a kind of a cross. It's like if Doom and Fear, like Doom 2016 and Fear from the 2000s, I think you guys remember those games, like the slow-mo. What else did I think this thing brought? And Titanfall 2 had a baby. And then in the setting of like, in like a cyberpunk setting, that's Sprawl. Fast-paced first-person shooter where it like has this slow-mo functionality. Headshots feel super satisfying.
Is it single-player? Yeah.
Single player only. Yeah. Cool. And it's really cool. Really fast paced, plays amazingly on the Steam Deck. So if you got one of those, highly recommend that. I'm sure it's even better with the mouse and keyboard, but yeah, this game's really cool. If you're looking for something short and sweet, potentially, it seems like there's about 15 levels in the game. I'm only just getting started, but having a great time. Pathfinding's a little bit questionable, but that's all right. Its strengths more than make up for those little weaknesses that I've found so far. And for an indie effort, it is truly, truly impressive. So I recommend Sprawl. Check it out. Now we've come to the end. Gentlemen, thank you for joining. Start with you, Peter. Are you out there? Are you on the social media? Do you want people to find you? If so, where should they go, and what do you have to, what do you have to plug?
I think for the purpose of this podcast, it would make more sense if they were to follow my, our actual business Instagram account. There's one at, I think it's Bewilder. Hey, Nick, is it just Bewilder? Yeah.
Bewilder TV, I think it is.
It might be Bewilder TV. So yeah, Bewilder TV. We've also got another little animation studio called Rave Growl, which also does everything from music videos to commercial stuff. That's also where we live in terms of our wheelhouse. My Instagram account is probably just me trying to porn off my band shows on other people and pictures of my dog. So that might not be the most
feel free. Feel free to put those. You want those there? That'll be down in the bottom. No problem with that. You're here.
But I'm kind of just I'm just trying to avoid putting my name out there because it's questionable. But it's my Instagram name is Snotskitpiet, so that's Snotskitpiet. That'll make more sense for the Afrikaans listeners than the English ones.
You'll have to send that to me later, and I'll put that in the I'll put okay, that in the description. It's all good. No, I'm not going to write it now. You're going to send it.
Nick is a much more illustrious and follow-worthy Instagram account, I think.
All right, unload on me. Unload on us. Let's hear it.
Yeah, my mind is devoid of personal stuff. It's pretty much just artwork. But that's, yeah, just my full name, Nicholas Rix on Instagram. I don't really live anywhere else on the internet. I do have a Twitter account, but I never use it. Instagram is the easiest thing for me because of its visual format. But yeah, that's pretty much where you can come and go and check out all the other stuff that I do. Yeah.
Sweet. Thanks a lot, guys. And you can follow me at Jays of Doom on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it these days. Don't care. And yeah, it's mainly just me hawking our wares, retweeting Atari stuff, posting some things about our games, the occasional like on some bands that I like and some flyer stuff, although they're out of the playoffs. So who cares about that at that point? I'm talking hockey, talking NHL. Hockey.
Nice.
Playoff season. My team's not in it, so
we were just talking about how much we'd love to watch hockey, but we have to get up at ridiculous times to do it. So
fair enough. Yeah.
We would love to.
Watch it afterwards. It's the same game. It's just as interesting. Cool. So yeah, well, hey guys, look, thanks a lot for joining one more time. And of course, join our Discord, rate and review the podcast, share it with your friends. Follow Atari, all those things. Buy Lunar Lander or wishlist it. It's available now. And we're all super proud of the experience we did, proud of the work that I hope Bewilder that you guys are over there are proud of the work you guys did because it really looks awesome. I think Dreams did an incredible job on the game and modernizing a game from that's 40 plus years old. So it's cool stuff and it's finally here. So check that out. And yeah, that's it. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.